Hi, everybody. My name is Mike Gibbs. I run AccountsRecovery.net, and I'm excited to bring you today's webinar on transforming your training, which is being brought to you by Peak Revenue Learning and the Collections Coach. Training collectors can be a complex and mundane task. Keeping the attention of employees and making sure they are engaged is no small feat. Today, in a webinar sponsored by Peak Revenue Learning and the Collections Coach, we have two of the foremost training experts from the credit collection industry here to share their tips and insights into how they make sure individuals not only learn what is important, but retain it as well. As I mentioned, this webinar is being generously sponsored by Peak Revenue Learning and the Collections Coach. You'll get the chance to hear more about them a little later in our program. Let me tell you a little bit about today's speakers. In her nearly 40-year career in the collection industry, Deborah Siski has been an active contributor on many levels. She served on the ACA Board of Directors from 2012 to 2018 and was elected in the first board election under the new governance structure. An ACA certified instructor since 1983, Deborah has taught nearly 200 ACA seminars and has been instrumental in the development of the Credit and Collection Compliance Officer Program, the Trainer Specialist Program, FDCPA seminars, and numerous others. Also with us today is Roger Weiss from CACI and the Collection Coach. Roger's also the president of ACA International. He's been involved in the collections industry since 1992 and is a frequent speaker at events and conferences. The format for today's webinar will be a presentation from Roger and Deborah. We encourage everybody to submit questions and we'll get to them when the presentation has concluded. To submit a question, please enter it into the question tab on your Zoom webinar control panel. This event is being recorded and a recording will be made available in the coming days on accountsrecovery.net. Finally, I want to ask everyone to take a minute and fill out the survey that should pop up on your screen after the webinar is over today. You'll also receive a link via email tomorrow to access the survey. Your feedback and your participation helps me develop content. That's what you're looking for, such as the topic we have for you today. And to make sure you hear the speakers you want to be hearing from, which is definitely the case with the people we have for you today. With that, let me bring in Roger and Deborah to begin today's presentation. Roger, are you with us?
I am. I fell out, but I'm back. You don't get rid of me that easy. So welcome, everyone. Thank you for joining us. This is something very exciting for both Deborah and I, and quite frankly, for Chris and Mike, and I hope for all of you, too, as we're marching into the holidays and then on into tax time. One thing is at a premium, and that is production time. So we can't take large chunks of time to sit collectors in rooms and give them 2 or 4 or 6 or 8 hour training sessions anymore. And the good news is that's not how people learn, or at least prefer to learn anymore. And that's what we're here to talk about today is micro learning. If we move on to slide number 2, we see a quote, and Deborah is responsible for this, but this is one of my favorite quotes, and I asked her if it's okay if I shared this with everyone, and that's, everyone's a genius, but if you judge a fish on its ability to climb a tree, it'll live its whole life with the belief that it is stupid, because as we know, most fish, anyway, I guess some in the Mississippi River are evolving where they might be able to climb some trees, but they can't climb trees. So different people have different abilities and learning techniques, and we're here today to talk about the most rapidly growing learning technique in society today, and that's that of microlearning. I have a 14-year-old son, and I shared with Deborah the other day that he loves watching these little video clips and reading these memes. He told me that this is a long video, and by that he meant about a minute and a half. And I was thinking, wow, I used to think 30-minute sitcoms were nothing, and a movie that wasn't even 2 hours wasn't even worth going to see. And then he told me he really likes looking at these memes, but he does not like the ones that are really wordy, because he just kind of loses it. And no, he does not have ADD or ADHD any more than I do, or the rest of most of society does. It's just our attention spans continue to get shorter and shorter, and that's just for hearing and receiving information and knowledge. Not even to be considered with retaining useful knowledge. So with that said, I want to turn it over to Deborah for a moment and tell her what we're really going to talk about today. Deborah?
All right. Thanks. Thanks a lot, Roger. And before I jump into the objectives, I want to just give the floor to Chris Rickman for just a second as a generous sponsor of this webinar to give us some insight into Knowledge Source.
Thank you, Deborah. And hello, everyone. We're grateful for the opportunity to sponsor today's webinar. Our company provides Knowledge Source, the leading employee education, compliance training, and micro-learning application to companies in the collection industry. Knowledge Source is used by our clients to simplify and lower the cost of training new and existing employees. Our clients are companies that want to build and maintain a high level of assurance their staff members have mastered and are maintaining their mastery of the knowledge expected of them when interacting with consumers. Knowledge Source automatically builds documentation of the compliance training efforts of the company for existing and prospective clients and for regulators. For those of you I don't know or haven't met, I've spent most of my career on your side of the desk. I've worked in the collection industry for more than 30 years, most of that time in the executive management of a collection firm. Knowledge Source was created to address many of the shortcomings in training and compliance I saw as a COO and CEO. Use Knowledge Source to implement an ongoing continuous training cycle, reinforcing the knowledge you expect your staff members to have before it begins to fade from memory. Present collection, client, or company policies to staff members during onboarding training and at ongoing recurring schedules where they acknowledge they have read and understand those policies and procedures. Present tests during training events to validate learning and on recurring schedules to certify staff knowledge in areas you wish, such as the FDCPA or HIPAA. Use Knowledge Source during training events to present videos or slideshows or audio recordings followed by a set of questions to validate participation and learning. Deploy a micro-learning strategy within your company. In summary, Knowledge Source will close knowledge gaps, promote accountability, lower the cost of training, document for prospective and existing clients, regulators, or auditors your company's proactive role in preventing compliance nonconformities. To find out more about us, visit peakrevenuelearning.com. Thank you.
All right, Chris. Hey, thanks very much for that summary. And it rolls right into the objectives for our seminar today. We've been using some jargon already, and we're going to get past that by providing you here in just a minute with the definition of microlearning so that we're all on the same page. We know what we're talking about. After completing the session, you'll also be able to list and discuss the benefits of using microlearning for introducing topics and providing the basis for higher level discussions. Knowing these benefits can help you sometimes sell the use of new technologies like this one to management. And then we'll talk about designing training sessions with highly impactful results from microlearning as the basis. So let's just jump right in and get started. So let's define microlearning. Microlearning is a way of teaching and delivering content to learners in small, very specific bursts. So microlearning modules concentrate on one very specific skill or topic or behavior that you want your agents to learn. So very small, specific bursts. Learners may be in control of what and when they're learning. So you can empower your employees to take the learning modules whenever they so choose, or you can assign them the learning modules, whatever works best in your environment. So microlearning links new training to previous training and through experience using past learnings on the job that will open up your students' minds to subsequent training. It reduces resistance to training because it links to the experience that your learners have had previously and also to previous training. So I don't know about you, but I've been in training sessions where the students come in, arms crossed, I dare you to teach me something. And that doesn't occur with microlearning because they're excited about the training because they know it's going to be a short, very meaningful experience. So with that, let's look at the benefits of microlearning. And Roger, could you explain to us this first benefit?
I can. Thank you, Deborah. I dare you to teach me something. And it's so true. We all have those in every class, regardless if you're in operational management or training and development or compliance. Someone always walks in the room with those arms crossed. And going back to the days of yesteryear, my background is in operations. I started as a collector, came up through the ranks into training and development, into management and so forth. And one thing that I knew is there was a shortage of training in the collection industry. What I learned as an agency owner is you want to train all the time and you never want to train because there's nothing more valuable than a collector's production time and you don't want to take away from that. And then I was introduced into some neuro-linguistic programming approaches and I decided to develop accidentally micro-learning for the collections coach without even knowing that's what I was doing. I said, you know, people need access to training when they need it and when they want it, and they can't have it just based upon the manager or the trainer's convenience, and you can't chunk time apart. So that led me to the video micro learning encapsulation, I guess, because they are so short. So as an example, if someone is having trouble overcoming a specific stall or objection, there needs to be a video for that. And that video might only be 3 or 4 minutes long where they can watch that video. And then incorporating it into knowledge source, it was accidentally a hand in glove fit. There needs to be a couple of proficiency questions asked. So it doesn't take any time for someone to watch a quick video and answer a couple of proficiency questions from their desktop computer without ever leaving the collection floor. So you don't have to worry about them getting ready to go to training and then getting ready to go back to work and forgetting everything that they learned in between. They learn something. They learn one specific honed-in skill. They get on the phone and they get to apply that skill nearly immediately. Excuse me. And we, you know, the great thing is we want to address a multitude of different modules to meet and overcome nearly any need that's out there, whether that be from executive engagement to meet and surpass the CFPB coming requirements, whether it is management, leadership, training, training and development, collections at the core level of what we do fastest and best. We want that flexibility in a single short concept to be delivered. Now, you don't have to have fancy videos. You don't have to have an LMS in order to deliver this. This can be something as simple as a quick stand-up meeting in the morning. Hey, everyone, we're getting ready to jump on the phones, and I just noticed the close rate was down over the past week. Let's remember to ask some positive leading questions. Let's remember to take the assumptive that they can and will pay their debt, and this is what we're going to do, and this is what we're going to say to get them to. Right there was an example of micro learning. Obviously, you want to go a little bit deeper than that, but that just demonstrates the flexibility and the power that you can bring with micro learning. That said, I'm going to take a sip of water and let Deborah talk to you for a few minutes.
All right. Thanks, Roger. So that's the first benefit of microlearning, that the learning is short. And because the learning is short, microlearning engages learners better. Learners remain engaged with the entire module because it is short, and they know that going in. So, you know, once your employees are used to taking microlearning modules, they know that, hey, this is going to be 4 minutes or this is going to be 7 minutes, probably not any longer than 8 minutes, and I can handle that. That's something that I can stay engaged with. And as Roger said, they concentrate on a single skill or concept, which really appeals to the learners. You know, people are no longer interested in boring information dumps. You know, and microlearning eliminates the lengthy learning modules and just adopts short bits of information. You know, studies that have been done in the training field have shown that microlearning boosts engagement of learners by 50%. So it focuses on the human attention span. It delivers the required impact by aligning the length of the training material with the limited attention spans of human beings, which is around 8 minutes or so. And we're going to talk about that attention span issue here in just a few minutes as well. So I'm going to move on and talk about the third benefit of microlearning. And to me, this is the key one. It increases knowledge retention. So retention increases because the modules build upon each other using common language and reinforcing techniques. So your learners will get used to the format. They'll get used to the language that you're using. You know, they'll hear you use the same terms from session to session to session, and that reinforces the learning and provides a lot of consistency. You know, one of the great things about microlearning is everybody gets the same training because they're taking the same modules. You know, even if you have the same trainer doing repetitive sessions with small groups, because that's just how it works best for you, each group is going to get a different presentation because that trainer is a human being. And not that that's a bad thing, because trainers are so important in helping the knowledge retention of microlearning, and we'll talk about how that works in a little while. But if you start with a consistent basis by using microlearning modules, so you get repetition through application on the job and subtle repetition that revisits key concepts and behaviors throughout the program. So the other good thing that helps with knowledge retention is the informal learning that goes on as people naturally just discuss the content of training that they just took. You know, you'll hear conversations in the break room or over lunch or just on the floor like, hey, you should have said XYZ in that last call because that microlearning that we took yesterday just talked about that. So you need to remember to do that. So people will end up training each other, and it's very exciting to me. So those are the benefits of microlearning. There are some various minor limitations of microlearning. Roger, would you like to talk about those?
I would, but before we get there, I want to just add on to something that you said, and that is towards retention. The other great thing about retaining or the ability to retain small chunks of knowledge is, if people are kind of in a learning cadence, they've got one simple thing to talk about rather than an entire litany of things. I remember back to my very young days when the Simpsons were new and on TV, and it never failed. We would sit in the break room or at lunch, and we would say, yeah, that Simpsons episode wasn't that good, was it? And then we would walk through half an hour of a show and point out 30 different funny parts of it. And it got me to thinking, when we're talking about retaining all of this knowledge, about how one individual chunk, we could spend an entire break or an entire lunch period talking about just one interaction that maybe Homer Simpson had with it, Mr. Burns or something like that. And we would really remember minute details about that. I've got a friend that I think has every minute detail of the entire Seinfeld series memorized, and I believe that's through repetition and redundancy that leads to retention, that he is able to remember verbatim scripts from entire episodes nearly. However, that said, there are some limitations of microlearning that I want to talk about, but I want to look at these limitations as opportunity, because I'm a big believer that the only way to eat an elephant is one bite at a time. So, for example, it's not ideal for complex concepts. As an example, if you're going to teach, let's say FDCPA, well, you don't want FDCPA, which is a complex concept, with a multitude of different parts and applications. But what I do believe you can do in a microlearning environment is break each one of those components down into a micro module, if you will, and build it up from there with a great rudimentary foundation of each simple concept, each building block that will build up into the complex concept. Whereas the complex concept of FDCPA may have 50 micro modules in it, each one of those micro modules is in and of itself a simple concept that can be easily digested as that bite of elephant. The other thing is, in micro learning, it doesn't necessarily appeal to all of the different kinds of learners. However, with it being so short, the different kinds of learners can oftentimes digest it but I believe it would be up to the manager or the trainer to appeal to the other, to different types of learners. If they're an audio learner, if they're a visual learner, if they're a learner through reading, you can supplement any sort of micro learning with other methods. As an example, and I'll never forget this, there are three types of communication: visual, verbal, and vocal. And visual in that communication makes up over 50% of the overall communication. Vocal, how you say what you say, is 38%. And I believe verbal, the words that are actually used, is 7%. But I believe it's imperative and incumbent upon us as leaders to incorporate every aspect of that communication so the different styles of learning can best benefit from anything. So with the Collections Coach as an example, we're primarily video, which is accompanied by audio. However, we're also going to make you think a little bit through incorporating it into Knowledge Source as an example with a couple of those proficiency questions so people can visualize things in their own head. It's also not suited for in-depth training as a standalone delivery method. Well, okay, I don't necessarily fully agree with that, but if we're playing devil's advocate, there has to be some limitations and some drawbacks. But again, I look at that as an opportunity to break things down into micro concepts and build them back up. That said, let's go ahead and move forward and talk about some of the different the outline of how we're going to get retention and the micro learning concept as a whole.
Hey, Roger.
The first thing.
Roger.
Yes.
I'm sorry.
Yes.
I'm sorry,
Deborah. Go ahead.
That's okay. I just have a really recent example that I think everyone will be able to connect with related to the statement that microlearning may not be suited for in-depth training as a standalone delivery method. So, you know, no e-learning can be expected to change behavior as a standalone tool. People need to get hands-on and practice skills and discuss the concepts with other. And that, so the microlearning modules provide the basis for those conversations. And let me just take you back a couple of years to, you know, the Navy was having a problem. And their ships were colliding with each other. That just happened a couple of years back, and I think you probably remember hearing about that in the news. And what happened after investigation, you know, about why this was occurring was that the people that were being trained to pilot those ships were getting all of their training through e-learning and computer-based simulations. They had no hands-on experience until their very first outing on those ships. And so, you know, it was determined that that was the root cause of the problem. So, you know, we want to keep in mind that e-learning provides knowledge, and the other adult education techniques that Roger was just about to get to bring it home and make the training more actionable. So, Roger, I hope that example kind of makes sense with what we're talking about.
I think it's very appropriate. I think it fit very well in there. So let's talk about the underlying adult education techniques that we're incorporating into our version of microlearning. And again, I don't want to put it out there that we are the end-all be-all by any means, and I encourage you guys to use us as a stepping stone to dig in and develop your own concepts of microlearning in adult education. But what I would encourage you to do is don't accept the status quo simply because it's there. Because it could have been there for a decade, and what we learned and how we learned a decade ago is probably obsolete by now. Think about how often people these days upgrade a laptop, tablet, or even a cell phone. It's the technology and therefore the way we learn technology and learn technologically changes so rapidly it's difficult to keep up. So the ones that we're incorporating, first of all, is primacy. People remember what they learned first. So usually when you go into a class, there it's going to start with, or even when you read something, it's going to start with a thesis statement. And many people are going to realize that. Deborah, I just want to hit on a couple things. If we could back up that slide, please.
Oh, sure.
I want you to dive more into the meat and potatoes of it, and I'll chime in a little bit on that. But people also remember what they learned last. And the thing I want to point out with those first two, primacy and recency, is it's even, and a lot of you probably are on Facebook and have seen this, where it's got a challenge for you to read a whole paragraph, and the only letters that are in the correct place is the first letter and the last letter, and you're able to pretty much with ease read the entire paragraph, and that's because it's a reading is a learned process, and as we get the flow of reading, we get the primacy and the recency, which is the first and the last. Lessons linking to another, that's kind of the stepping stones. If you were to do underlying, or if you were to do spaced learning all at once, well, that takes the spacing away, and you can't digest all of the information. Make it memorable, and I want to talk about that a little bit more when we get to that slide, because I've got a great personal experience how I was taught to make it memorable, and I've paid that forward tenfold. The 90-20-10 rule, which Deborah is going to dive into quite a bit, and then review. It's amazing that we have to understand to learn and know something. We have to see it a minimum of six times. That's a minimum of six times, not a maximum of six times, and then we know it. The sharpest mind still takes 10 or six times to learn something to a point of repetition, consistent repetition. On average, it's about 10 times. That said, Deborah, if you would dive in more to the recency and primacy, I'd appreciate it.
Okay, great. I'll be happy to do that. So as Roger said, primacy means people remember what they learned first. Recency means people remember what they learned last, which means that all the stuff that gets trained in between can sometimes get lost. And so the beauty of microlearning is that you can take a part of a concept that you might have taught in the middle of a session, in one session, bring that to the forefront of the next session, review that, make it important and now primary to what you're training, and then continue your session and maybe end the session with another poke at that same material. So the beauty of microlearning is that you have the opportunity to sort of mash up your material in such a way that the key concepts are always in front or they're always at the end. And so that increases retention. That's the beauty of it. And if you're developing it yourself, you can do that. Or if you're using the modules that we're creating for the collections coach, you know, that's done for you. So let's move on to the second underlying adult education techniques that we want to talk about is linking. And Roger, I'll just jump into this one if you'd like, and you can add as you go. So one thing that helps link modules is using language that links lessons one to another. So you're using a common language that your folks understand. We use common industry-specific language in the modules that we're creating, and it helps people make that link back to a previous session that they've had, and then they can link it also to the experience that they've had on the floor in the performance of their job, then it just kind of, it gives them that aha moment that, oh yeah, that's what that means, and that is how it works with this problem, and that's how it works with this other problem. So there are commonalities between the modules. Linking brings what you taught in the middle of the last session to the beginning of today's session. So we talked about that a little bit as we were talking about primacy and recency. And the programs build upon, it's kind of like thinking about, you know, how TV shows sometimes end with a real strong foreshadowing of what's to come in the next show, and it makes you really want to make you watch it because you want to find out what they were, you know, what was that? What were they promising us that was going to happen? And so it gets your students, again, excited about the learning because they already know a nugget of what they're going to get in the next session, and they just can't wait to get there. Now, you know, you don't have to use sessions in a particular order, and they still link because they use the common techniques as well. Roger, did you want to add anything to that?
I actually do. One of the things that I have learned, especially in the shorter the session, the more important the cliffhanger is. And Deborah alluded to it or mentioned it with television shows, and we hadn't rehearsed or talked about that in the past, but I can't think of a better example. I take us back, and I'm going to age myself here. Who Shot JR is one of the earliest cliffhangers I can really remember from a final season finale of Dallas, where someone shot the character JR, and we had to wait months at that point to find out who shot JR. Not to kill the series for anyone, but only to find out a season or two later it was only a dream. Not that that was a weak plot line or anything. But anyway, I find that using those cliffhangers and foreshadowing keeps people hungry, keeps them wondering, keeps them guessing, and keeps them engaged so that they can make it a focal point to focus on what they are learning so they can apply it better. The master of that today is Tony Robbins. Tony Robbins, for years, I shunned because he was always going to tell me what he was going to tell me, but he never got to the point he told me. He would say, you know, we're going to study this in a few minutes, but before we do that, we're going to do this. And then later down the road, we're going to talk about this. But I always felt like he never got to what he was going to talk about. But then going back and studying it and reviewing him later, boy, he sure as heck hit it out of the park, and he nailed it. So I believe that linking, you have to go forward and backwards in order to do strong linking. And I believe that linking is incredibly important in training at any level. That's what I would add to that. And then Deborah, if you don't mind, I'd like to start out, lead us off on spaced learning just a little bit. Because that's one of the elements that really drove me to developing the collections coach. And that is, you know, if you think about it, people new to the industry come in on day one and they sit in a classroom for about a week, a lot of times in several agencies. And when they sit in that classroom for a week, they might go through a day or 2 days of FDCPA and a 4-hour block on HIPAA and a 6-hour block on company policies and another 2-hour block on the handbook. And all of these things is so overwhelming. At the end of the first day or the end of the third day, you ask a trainee, so how do you think? How are you doing? Oh, there's just a lot. There's a lot to digest. And that's so true. So think of it as we just experienced one of my favorite days of the year, Thanksgiving. And think about spaced learning like spaced eating. You want to set a good cadence, and you're not going to get 2 or 3 or 4 plates back to back because you're not going to be able to handle all of that. And there's going to come a time where there's a breaking point. However, if you start out with some nice appetizers and wait for a while and digest them a little bit and then go back for a main course, who knows, maybe two. I like to start out with a plate of only sides and then go back for turkey and ham. But that spaced learning is the same concept. You don't sit at one sitting and eat the elephant because you can't digest everything that you just took on. So if you're able to take 3, 5, or 10 minutes even and take one simple concept, digest it, go back and apply it, and then come back and relearn it again and do that 3 or 4 or 10 times over the course of time. And in between, you're practicing that skill. You have a better chance at retaining that and building that. And as a trainer and as a leader, you have a greater chance of putting that information long-term into that collector's mind to help them with your overall employee retention. So yes, I did just do a linking from micro learning to employee retention. Deborah, on spaced learning, did you want to add to that, please?
Yeah, I just want to add one thing to that, Roger, and that is I'm sure many of us who have worked in operations have had to provide feedback and retraining to collectors because they didn't perform something well, and we would have expected them to perform that because we know that was included in their training. But yet when you ask the collector, you know, gee, how come you didn't do this thing? It was, it's a key process, and the answer is invariably, I was never trained on that. Well, guess what? They were, but it was so embedded in everything else that they got in that week of new hire training that they forgot they learned it because they had really 17,000 other things to learn in that period. So, you know, let me conclude by saying there's a great value in sleeping on it once you've learned something new. So, with that, Roger, why don't we move on to making training memorable? I know that you wanted to really make some points here.
I do. So years ago, I went to ACA's Instructor Training Academy, and we had a guest speaker come in, Jim Smith Jr. Several of you on the call probably know him, have met him, and have heard of him, and follow him and study him. But man, that's one thing that really resonated with me, and that's to make any training that you do memorable. And a couple of the things that I took from him, and this is more to just get your creative juices flowing. Now, when I will do, if I'm doing steps of a phone call, as an example, I have laminated footprints that I put on the floor with the different steps on each of the footprints. If I'm talking about goal setting, I have pictures of clouds that I tack to the boards on the ceiling. I really want to get three-dimensional with the space. And then just always remember, you have a multitude of senses that you can use, not just seeing and hearing. I like to put, been quoted in an article as saying, when I'm going to teach compliance as an example, right before the class starts, I like to wipe everything down with Lysol or spray a little bit of Lysol in the room so that everyone remembers that clean, fresh smell, and they'll associate that with compliance. Just a couple little quirky things I have, but those are a couple of the different ways I like to make it memorable. That can be with training, that can be with a management meeting, that can be with launching a contest. Years ago, and I'll come nowhere close to doing this now, I jumped out of the ceiling through a ceiling tile in camouflage and full combat gear for the collectors to play the card game of war to win prizes throughout the day. So I still have people talk to me and tell me about that and what their reaction to that was. So those are just a couple of the ways I believe in making it memorable. Deborah, did you want to add to that, please?
Yes, I'd be happy to. And not all of us are Roger Weiss. Not all of us have the capability of coming up with some of the very memorable activities that Roger does. So let me just share with you some things that you can do in your micro-learning sessions and which we try to do with our collection coach sessions. So if you're going to be recording a PowerPoint, you know, a narrated PowerPoint, make sure that your narrator is excited and interesting. They need to be excited about the material. Sometimes that, you know, have a guest narrator like your collection manager or a collector himself or herself who is really excited about, you know, how to overcome objections, for example. Let them narrate one of your PowerPoints because your students listening to that micro-learning session, they'll get that. They'll feel that sense of excitement from the narrator. And that just makes it, again, more memorable. You can embed video and animation into your PowerPoints if you're doing recorded PowerPoints. Ours have some of this as well. You know, animation can just be how your text appears on the screen in an animated way. I would say don't get like overboard with this kind of stuff because it takes a lot of time to develop with that, but it can be a little bit too much and it can detract from the learning. But you want to make the most important points as memorable as possible. You have a huge library of resources that I think oftentimes go unused in our agencies, and that is we have audio clips from recorded calls that actually demonstrate the learning point that we're trying to make. So, you know, demonstration, hearing someone applying the concepts that you're teaching are key to learning and actually encourage application on the job. Well, if so-and-so can do that and I heard them do it and they got a good response, I'm going to try it too. use applicable graphics, photos, quotes, or infographics. You know, we have to remember that while a lot of people can learn by seeing things, there are two different kinds of ways that we see things. We see words and we read words and we, you know, understand what they say, but we also see these photos or quotes or infographics in a different way. So there are people that learn through pictures and people that learn through words. So if you can find ways to incorporate good photos or graphics in your training modules, that will again make them memorable. To me, the most important thing is the post-module discussion with the trainer or with other learners. You know, the way to learning is to teach something to someone else. So you've just learned something and now you have to discuss it or reteach it to another person. You're never going to forget it because now you've had to assimilate how you're going to explain it to someone. You've heard yourself say it, so it uses that audio sense as well. And it's going to be memorable. You won't forget it because you actually did it. And then finally, quizzes. We use quizzes to reinforce the material. To me, I'm more important that a person gets an additional touch on the material through a quiz question. Yes, if they got the quiz wrong or right, that's pretty important. But just the fact that a quiz allows us to revisit that material with someone another time is a key way to make that content exceptionally memorable. But I just have one example I want to show you. That's a very simple example of a graphic. To me, simple graphics are the best graphics because, number one, they don't take long to develop. This took me like maybe 5 minutes to put together. And they are a good way for a learner to visualize your point. So this graphic here might relate to, you know, how to find the sweet spot in what you can get the consumer to pay. And it's a balance between or the intersection of the consumer's resources and the balance that we're trying to collect. And there's a sweet spot in there somewhere that's going to appeal to that consumer. So with that, let's move on, unless you have something you want to add here, Roger.
I think we're good for now.
Okay, so let's move on and talk about some microlearning best practices. And so this is the introductory to a few slides that we have going forward. We're gonna ask, is microlearning the right mode for your content? And yes, it is the right mode. If you can relate concrete examples, we're going to talk about that in more detail. If you can chunk larger content into bite-sized pieces, that's what microlearning is all about. If you can build a series by using these bite-sized pieces to build, you know, your meatloaf, for example. If you can provide a workbook, and I'll talk to you in a minute about why that's important. And then if you can publish online somewhere a reference tool or a paper or have a paper reference tool that learners can go back to, you know, if that's necessary. And we're going to talk about very briefly sort of the need to know, nice to know, and just know how to look it up kind of material. So I'm going to pop over to the next slide here, Roger, and we'll talk about using concrete examples to illustrate abstract concepts. And Roger was using the example of the FDCPA a few minutes ago. And the FDCPA is an abstract. I mean, yes, it's on words on paper, but what we do with it and how we apply it is abstract. And so we have to find a way to make that concrete by using examples of behaviors that are compliant with the FDCPA. If you're teaching collection techniques, then as I said before, you want to include short clips from actual calls to reinforce the concept that you're trying to train at that moment within your microlearning concept. Now, if audio clips aren't available, then the narrator maybe can bring in another person and model the technique in the lesson. You can role play it, you know, briefly. Again, you want to remember that you're not going to use a clip of a whole call because that would make your microlearning module not so micro, but just use the applicable parts of a call. You can edit those very easily and insert those into your, embed them into your lesson, and there you go. To me, it's one of the most unused and most easily available resource that there is. So, Roger, did you want to add to this one at all?
Only from the point of, you know, the other thing, if you can use examples of videos so that you can see body language and what have you, that would be more staged and a little bit more complex. But when you're able to see something, or even if you could show a picture associated with an audio clip. As an example, if you're trying to use an example of a collector that's disengaged and you show collector with a headset on, sitting at a desk, throwing pencils at the ceiling. To me, that's a pretty good concrete example of showing how an example of someone is disengaged. Just a little bit to add on to that there. That's what I would put on there. Moving on, we should talk about the rules of content, because that's where so many people miss this, and they do it just assuming that time equals training, and that's not necessarily the case. Deborah's kind of an expert on this, and I'm going to turn it over to her and just chime in here in a couple minutes if there's a couple.
Yes, thanks, Roger. I'll try to be concise here. So the 90-20-10 rule, I need to attribute this to its author, and that is Bob Pike. Bob Pike is like the guru of training. He's been around for as long as I've been involved in training, which goes back to 1980 or so. And I've learned a lot from reading and learning about his philosophies. But he came up with the 90-20-10 rule, and I believe it's spot on. So the 90-20-10 rule says that we can teach content for 90 minutes without a break. So to me, that's the maximum, 90 minutes. Content needs to be chunked in 20-minute sessions. So within your 90-minute training session, if you're doing like a live session or even a webinar with people, you want to make sure that you're changing gears about every 20 minutes to keep people's attention. And then there needs to be interaction with that module every 10 minutes. So for microlearning, for example, you want to make sure that your individual lessons are no longer than 20 minutes, but they have to, those that are 20 minutes long, which is pretty long for microlearning, have to include a resource that requires student interaction at least every 10 minutes. And then you don't want them sitting in front of that training session for any more than 90 minutes, because they're going to be just fried from that at that point. So a resource requiring student interaction could be a workbook, a worksheet, do they send them on a scavenger hunt throughout the office, pause that thing and go do something for a couple minutes just to keep them active and then re-engage with the material. So if there's no interaction resource available, you don't have a workbook or worksheets or anything, then you have to make sure that your microlearning modules should be right around 8 to 10 minutes long and no longer. So Roger, what did you want to add to that?
Just that this is, I even challenged the 90-minute rule anymore. I think that it probably needs to be closer to 60 or 75 minutes. That's personal opinion, and Bob Pike is a heck of a lot smarter than me. I just think that with the changing of the guard, so to say, generationally, and we're dealing with more and more younger ages coming into the professional community, I don't think that we're going to gain attention for 90 minutes unless we have, we obviously don't allow them to access cell phones and other media. Otherwise, the focal session or the focal points will be about 2 minutes. I definitely agree with the 8 and the 10 minute rules. Keep it short, keep it concise, keep it focused so people can engage. I did want to move on and just make a couple of comments about using micro-assessments to measure learning and review. And I want to come at this from a little bit different of a perspective, and that's your sales and marketing perspective. When you're able to tell clients and prospects that how often and how much you train, but more to the point, how do you train and how do you measure that training, and you do retain that training. Years ago, when we became PPMS certified through ACA International, we started a training log, and it was pretty arduous. And then I met this guy a few years later, goes by the name of Chris Rickman. You may have heard of him. And he had this pretty cool product out, now Knowledge Source. And these questions under each user are retained indefinitely. So not only can you, is it important to retain that, but you can also look at curves. How are they doing? Were they very focused at one point and got worse and need to go and revisit some other assignments? But you're able to look at trend analysis based on what they are doing, and whether, again, you do it through a tool like Knowledge Source or a couple of others out there, or if you do it manually, it's imperative that you use these micro assessments so they understand that you are looking at what they're supposed to understand, and that they are in agreement that they understand it, and they are showing proficiency with that. Deborah, did you want to add to that a moment?
Yeah, I just want to address the bullet points briefly and expand a tiny bit on that. So when you're doing microlearning, you want to have your micro-assessments occur right after that training occurs, so that, again, it provides another touch at the material, and it helps learning to occur. It will reinforce that material that you just trained, you know, through reiteration. It doesn't seem like a review, but that's really what these microlearning quizzes are meant to be. So I have a firm belief that scenario-based questions help with the transfer to on-the-job application of concepts and behavior. So scenario-based questions in terms of, okay, here's the fact pattern, you know, what would you do next? Or what should the collector say when the consumer says this? And you can have, you know, open-ended questions or true and false questions. You can have multiple choice questions. You know, the combinations are almost infinite. But scenario-based questions help make that application. The Collections Coach modules that we are distributing through Knowledge Source include at least 3 questions per microlearning module. So, you know, it again, we're kind of doing what we're saying and making sure that your folks have the opportunity to review through the micro assessments. All right, so I'm going to move on, Roger, to revisiting the key material at least 6 times. And this really is, as we said probably more than once, is the beauty of micro learning. So, you know, using the data that you have and evaluations and observation of job behaviors, this stuff will indicate which modules your learners may need to repeat. And so, you know, maybe they haven't revisited enough, or maybe it was long enough ago that they need to see it again. And your learners will get used to, you know, revisiting this material, and they'll engage with it immediately because they'll remember it. It's kind of like watching that rerun of the Brady Bunch that you might have seen, you know, 25 years ago, and you start watching it, you're like, oh yeah, I know what Marcia's going to do next because I saw this 25 years ago. But it's exactly the same kind of learning process that takes place. And as you're doing your revisitation, modules will build upon each other naturally, and they'll provide opportunities to revisit those key concepts and the required behaviors that go with them. So that kind of goes back to linking as well. Roger, anything you want to add there?
Not on that one. That's okay. Just do it over and do it again.
Right, exactly. So we just have a couple minutes left. I don't know if there are questions, but Roger, do you want to wrap up here with this one?
I can indeed. I don't see any questions out there. Mike, did you have any questions that you want us to hit before we wrap up and close out?
I did not, but I will use this as an opportunity to remind everybody before we wrap up, if you have a question for Deborah or Roger, this would be your last and best chance to type it into the Zoom webinar control panel and submit it before this webinar is over.
So one of the things that I learned early on in my career is a statement given to me by one of my role models, Nick DiGiovanni, is the juice worth the squeeze? And that's where microlearning comes in. It provides time-effective and cost-effective solutions. The juice is worth the squeeze. There's an ROI on it. Obviously, engaged learners are more likely to apply learning on the job because it is in small doses. And high-impact training delivered in short bursts marries up engaged learners and just-in-time training delivery for high-impact results. If they learn it in a short, fast, and repetitive, frequent burst, you're going to feel those impacts that much quicker. Mike, looks like we have a question before we hit the wrap-up slide.
Absolutely. The question is, how do mock calls play into microlearning?
I will take that for just a moment and then hand it over to Deborah. I would say, as long as you do it one mock call and you have a scenario with a desired outcome that you stay focused on that, it could very much be part of microlearning. I would be cautious to not let it sway, because as we all know, when we put the wrong people in the wrong chair, they like to give worst case scenario and drag that call out for 30 minutes. And I know everyone on this call is not going to allow any one of their collectors to sit on a non-productive call for 30 minutes and go in circles just for the purpose of training or any other reason for that matter. So I would say keep it short and keep it concise. Deborah, did you want to add to that?
Yeah, I just wanted to say that using a mock call to get your learners to demonstrate that they actually learned what is in the module would be a great thing to do in that sort of after micro learning module conversation or discussion within a group. And again, you know, you're not going to have someone, the beauty of it is you're not going to have your collectors demonstrate a whole call, that the ones that Roger's talking about, that people just want to get the attention and do it for 30 minutes. But you're going to say, okay, well, you just did a module on identifying the consumer. Let's see what that sounds like. Let me hear you say that, Roger. Let me hear you say that, Matt. Let me hear you say that, Mike. And, you know, again, that's the repetition. People are saying it, and they're hearing it, and they're revisiting it, and you're going to easily exceed your 6 times on that one. So with that.
Great points, Deborah.
Thank
you.
Go
ahead, please.
I just wanted to thank Chris Rickman for being the sponsor for this webinar today, and also provide the Chris's contact information for Peak Revenue Learning. Here's his phone number and email information, and he'll give you the rundown on Knowledge Source and how you can access Collections Coach thereby. All right, Mike, I'll turn it over
to you. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Excellent. Well, Deborah, Roger, thank you very much for the presentation today. Really appreciate you both taking time out of your very busy schedule to share such a comprehensive look at microlearning and the impact that it can have on a collection operation. I think everybody anywhere can benefit from that. So thank you for sharing. Again, I want to echo everyone's Deborah's comments and thank Chris Rickman and Peak Revenue Learning for sponsoring today's webinar. Like it says on the slide, go to peakrevenuelearning.com to learn more. Thanks to everybody who participated today. A final reminder to please take a minute and fill out the feedback survey to help identify topics and speakers that will be of the best use to you going forward. Thanks for that. And I hope everyone stays tuned to accountsrecovery.net for news and more webinars in the very near future. Deborah, Roger, thank you so much. Awesome job. Really appreciate it.
Thanks. It was a pleasure.
Thank you, Mike. Thank you, Chris and Deborah. Goodbye.
Thanks.